Hi everyone, I'm Maggie and welcome back to Crown Posse, a lighthearted look into our favorite royals across the pond. So after pre-ordering this months ago and weeks of waiting, Megan and I have both received our copies of Prince Harry's memoir, Spare. Today we're going to be diving into our initial thoughts and breaking down the first half of the book. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. All right, we are here together with Megan once again.
Hey guys.
Thank you for joining me. Of course. So we both received our copies of Spare this week. Yours was a little delayed, which was frustrating.
Yeah, I didn't get it till Thursday.
I felt like that was, we talked about this last episode, like what if you get yours before mine?
Yeah.
And then it, we manifested that.
It was probably my bank account.
Yeah. Your bank account manifested it. So For transparency, neither one of us has finished the book.
Right. I'm about halfway.
Okay. I'm about 80%. So this episode today is we're going to discuss the first half, and then we're going to dedicate another episode to the second half, which I think even works out better because even just the way it's being set up, part three, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Part three is really when Megan comes into the picture. And
yeah, I haven't even gotten there yet.
Yeah. And we see all of the, you know, the recent stuff. So I think it's good to dedicate a whole episode to that in itself. So I think, you know, this episode right now is just going to be the first half, and then we'll go from there. But I wanted to start with our thoughts before reading. So, first of all, did you watch the episode or the interview? What was it? 60 Minutes?
No, I taped it. I haven't watched it
Okay.
yet.
So,
did you?
Yeah, I did, okay. But and it was really just the same, you know, interview that he's been giving, just promoting the book, essentially. Right. But I don't even know who hosts 60 Minutes. I don't know. I don't know who it was.
I know we talked to Anderson Cooper, and I know.
Yes, it was Anderson Cooper. Okay. Yeah. So he basically asked Harry, like, "What's the purpose here?" Which I was glad he asked him because we've kind of asked ourselves the same questions. And I liked his answer. It made a lot of sense to me. I kind of went in a little bit irritated, like, you know, another interview. What is the purpose here, you know? And then his answer kind of resolved that for me. And he said it was to tell his story in a language that they understand, not through the tabloids. So I actually totally understand that. Like, these are his feelings coming from his mouth, not leaking through the tabloids. There can be no misunderstanding, miscommunication. They're like middlemen, you know, messing
up. It's his chance to publish his story, everything.
And I feel like he thinks he has no choice at this point.
Yeah.
So that made sense to me. And then I don't remember if Anderson asked this or not, but there's been an ongoing question after, you know, all of the media attention that this book is getting, can the monarchy survive? And I know we've actually done an episode about this before, but the monarchy has survived for centuries.
Absolutely.
And we kind of were talking about this upstairs, but if anything, this type of conflict, I think, actually pushes royalists closer to the royal family.
That's how I'm feeling, at least.
Yeah. Like, if you are pro-royal family, anything that happens in this conflict is just pushing you closer that way. So I think the answer to that question is absolutely the monarchy is going to survive this book.
Yeah.
I mean,
they've been through much more.
Yeah, exactly. Henry VIII. I mean, come on. That wasn't a great time. Okay, so let's talk about our thoughts before reading this. So we were both excited.
Very.
When did this get announced? Like last year, I think. And we were like, oh, really? He's writing a memoir?
Yeah. It was before we heard about the book way before we heard about the Netflix documentary, right?
Yeah. I think there was like speculation about a memoir early last year.
Okay.
And we both were like, dope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then I was actually just telling my husband earlier that when the title was released, my jaw literally dropped.
Yeah.
Like, Spare? That's so good.
Yeah, that's heavy.
That is so heavy.
Yeah.
It's so good. Whoever came up with that, I'm hoping it was Harry, but it's so good. And then we got it in the mail this week, and I wasn't expecting it to be so big. It's a
nice book.
Yeah, it's a thick boy. Which, hence
he's got
why
a lot going on in here.
Yeah, he does. In his 37 years, you know? But hence why we haven't finished it yet, because it's a lot. And we'll get into the density of it. Let's see. So I was actually obviously really excited to read this, but not so much for like the juicy details about the royal family, but more for, I think his intention in writing this was, obviously it's a memoir, but it really was a way to talk through his journey with grief.
Yeah.
And I was excited for that. I don't think, you know, we've heard from him a lot about the death of his mother, but I don't think he's that open when he speaks about it.
I agree.
You know, he's very like, matter of fact, this is where he was when it happened, whatever. But he has been very closed off with like the mental side of that journey. And I think in this book, the intention was to really write down and, you know, get in words what he went through. So I was excited to see that. And of course, the juicy stuff, too.
Of course, the juicy stuff, too.
Okay, and then once again, with the release of this book, we run into the issue of people just casting judgment without reading it and, you know, pulling certain excerpts, and that's what's circulating social media. And I've come to the conclusion that I will no longer entertain people's opinions if it's clear that they're just coming from, like, tabloids.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't do it anymore.
I think that that's probably exactly how Harry felt.
Yeah.
He was like, enough. Like, you guys are all twisting and turning all these different storylines and outright lies.
Right.
You know, here's what I have to say about it.
Yeah.
This is the only place we can get actual...
Right. His side.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Literally, people, like, message me on Instagram or whatever it is, and it's so frustrating because it's like, read the book. Or, you know, watch the Netflix series or read the book. And then if after that you still feel the same way, then that's totally fine. Like, I have no problem with that.
Right.
But if you're getting your tabloid headlines off of, like, MSN.com and then you message me about it, like, maybe just don't.
Don't regurgitate other people's opinions.
Right. Exactly.
If you don't want to read about it yourself, then just stay quiet about it.
Oh, my God. 100%. Like, that's exactly how I feel. Like, if you don't care so much, then stop talking about it so much.
Exactly.
You seem really angry.
If you don't want to put the time into reading the memoir,
right?
Totally fine. Shut up about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, we actually don't need your opinion from a headline.
Exactly.
About a book you didn't read or a docuseries you didn't watch.
What a weird thing to do.
What a weird thing to do.
That's like...
But, like, that's the society we live in now, though.
Yeah.
That we all just pass on information that we've heard. It's one big game of telephone, and nobody's actually doing any... Well, not nobody, but there's a lot of opportunity with actually, like, paying attention to the facts and doing the reading yourself.
Can you imagine if someone was like, hey, have you ever seen this movie? And you know you hadn't seen the movie, but you said, yeah, I hate that movie.
Right.
Like, what? That's such a weird thing to do.
Yes.
But we see it all the time here. Okay, so I think we're going to get into the actual context. I think the easiest way to do it is just chronologically kind of how the book is laid out. We'll probably, that's probably the intention in the beginning, and then we'll go from there.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So he really gets into the death of his mother pretty quickly, of course, because that, I mean, was one of the building blocks of the rest of his life. There was a quote that he said that, like, moved me to my core. And it was right in the beginning, after his mother passed. And he had convinced himself that she had gone into hiding.
Oh.
And that was a theme throughout a lot of the book. But he said...
That broke my heart.
Yeah. And I have goosebumps even saying this.
Right now I do too.
Yeah. But the quote was, I'd know if she weren't alive. My body would know, my heart would know, and neither knows any such thing. So I'm actually going to cry because I feel like he really truly thought, you know, your mother's part of you.
He refers to her as disappearing for so long.
Yeah.
Like, he's, I think, well into his 20s or maybe even 30s before he actually accepts that she's dead.
Right.
Which is, I mean, what a horrible, not horrible.
Yeah.
It's a heartbreaking way to have coped with it.
Absolutely. And I don't want to obviously personalize it too much, but I lost my dad in October of last year. And there was a good week, I'd say, where I had convinced myself that there was a mistake, even though my mom had gone and, you know, made sure it was him and stuff. And there was a good week that I convinced myself that the doctor would call and be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, there was a terrible mistake. Or he would call.
Yeah.
And it's just your brain's coping mechanism, or, like, you know, a defense mechanism
just can't accept it.
Right. And obviously I knew that was probably not the case, but it was just a way of kind of softening the blow. Mm-hmm. But in this case, that's actually pretty feasible that his mom went into hiding. Like, that's not a crazy theory.
Honestly, like, I've watched a lot of Diana conspiracies, mm-hmm. and, like, I've had nights where I've convinced myself, maybe she is living in Canada. Like,
yeah.
Eventually, she came back out to her boys. They have to keep up the disappearance story, and she got away.
Yeah.
And I don't really believe in my core that that's true, but sometimes it's nice to think about.
Absolutely, and I can understand why Harry could more easily. But I can understand why Harry would be able to more easily convince himself of that.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think he knew it was a defense mechanism, but the part where he said his body would know and his heart would know if she was gone, like, your mother's a part of you, so he thought he would be able to feel it if she wasn't alive, and he didn't, so that's so sad.
That's so sad. And even, like, the dialogue between him and William about how William had kind of had some of those same thoughts, too, but then said, you know, she would never do that to us.
Yes.
But then Harry goes, well, she wouldn't die on us either.
And he said,
Fair point,
yeah.
Oh.
Like, she wouldn't die on us either. Like, it was her choice. Oh my God, I'm actually already going to cry.
Okay. I know. Do you remember where you were? Or do you remember Diana passing?
I actually don't. Well, it was 97.
Yeah.
So I was only six. And I don't really remember, but I do remember desperately wanting the Beanie Baby. So it was before.
Oh, I should have brought it. I have it.
Oh my God, you do?
Do you have it?
I don't.
You never got it?
No.
Oh, come on.
I know.
I have it. It took me a long time to find. Remember when we first started doing this? I, like, really wanted to dig it out.
And yes.
I thought it was gone.
Yeah.
I did eventually find my crate of Beanie Babies
in
my parents'
house. Oh, and she was in there?
Yeah, she was in there.
Do you have her on display?
I do.
Aww.
Of course. She's sitting in between my Kate and my Diana
Funko. Oh, how sweet.
But no, I do remember Diana dying.
Okay, tell me where you were.
I think maybe we have talked about this before. Maybe not on a recording, though. But I was in fourth grade, and I remember my teacher, Mrs. Tiza, was literally tears in her eyes as she was telling us that the Princess of Wales had passed.
Oh,
yeah. And I didn't know. I thought she was like a mermaid.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, the Princess of Wales. Like, she must be a marine biologist. Like, how do you become a princess of marine life?
That's so cute.
I didn't realize Wales was a country.
Like that's
I didn't know
so
anything
cute.
About the British royal family. But I did know that it was a huge blow to have lost her.
Yeah.
And then eventually I learned more about her life
and
that Wales was a location spelled differently than those large mammals that I love. But
she must have been a mermaid.
That's
not far off.
How do you become such an aquatic princess like this?
Your career goals totally changed.
Zookeeper, what? Yeah. No, I want to be the Princess of Wales now. Sounds like you just opened up.
That's so cute. No, her death was well before I, like, really knew anything like that. But on the topic of Beanie Babies, the one Beanie Baby I wanted to procure more than any was the Britannia one.
Oh.
And I feel like now, looking back, that's so on brand. I was an Anglophile even back then.
That's adorable.
I know. I don't know why I wanted her so bad. I never got her, though. So, kind of going into, like, where you were, I feel like most people, especially, like, our generation or a little bit older, know exactly where they were when Diana died.
Yeah.
And Harry speaks about comforting other people, like comforting total strangers and feeling kind of like that middleman between their grief and his mother. And he wrote in it, because they would say, like, oh, she was this, she was that, probably trying to comfort him as well.
Right.
And he thought, well, you didn't know her. You don't know her. And
they were saying wonderful things.
Yeah.
But
just like gatekeeping.
Like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Gatekeeping.
I do want to just put it out there, Harry, if you are listening, we actually do know her.
You are listening. No, we do.
We're her friends. Yeah. So, and she would definitely be friends with us. So.
Absolutely.
But I kind of understand that where he felt, again, like gatekeeping his mother's death. Like, most people get to process the death of their mother, but he had to immediately go comfort strangers about the loss of the most important person in his life. He didn't even get time to mourn her because he was helping other people mourn her. Like, that's so, that's like,
and he was
toxic.
12.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I can't say this, like, too confidently because I do feel like maybe if we were closer, we would have been there, too. But kind of shame on those strangers, too. It's the best intentions. Their intentions were good for showing up, bringing flowers, yeah. mourning outside. But, like, if her sons, her young sons, had come up to us, I would never be, like, crying to him. I'd be like, oh, my God.
Shame,
like,
on whoever brought them there.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's what I...
They shouldn't have had to walk behind the carriage.
Mm-mm.
They shouldn't have had to... Is carriage the right word? Coffin. But it was in the... Yeah. It was on the gun carriage, right? Yeah. Yeah, there was just so much behind her death that they had to be princes.
Yes.
Instead of sons that just lost their mother.
Yeah.
And that... Shame on the adults for that. And I think absolutely. He touches on one point of somebody... I want to say Marco, but I feel like maybe Marco wasn't there yet. But somebody arguing on the kid's behalf, like, no, they can't, like, walk behind.
Yeah.
Or at least just the heir. Leave the, you know, spare the little one.
Yeah.
Don't make him walk. Spare the spare.
Oh.
And they said, no, it's a, it, we're, we need both princes.
Yeah.
Like, for what? The publicity? Right. The media? The right picture?
Exactly.
Like, this, oh, it's so sad.
Yeah. And even, you know, we've seen a lot about how the public was disappointed with how long it took the queen to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, even she has said that she was there as a grandmother.
Right.
She kept the kids at Balmoral. Was that where they were? Sandringham? I get the two confused. I think they were at Balmoral.
In my head, I picture those both as, like, those two estates as, like, the same thing.
Wait,
and I
do
know
too.
That they're not.
Yeah.
I think they were actually at Sandringham.
Okay. Well, regardless.
I guess I'm not positive. But
yeah.
They were with her.
Yeah. And doing, you know, outdoorsy things.
Coming,
like,
fishing,
yeah. It. She was trying to let them have a few days to process this outside of the public eye. And then
the public. They were being kept from, like, the media, the newspaper.
And that was the intention. And then, of course, the public eye is like, where is our family? You know what I mean? Where it's like, can you give them a second?
Right.
And he even said a tabloid headline came out towards the queen that says, show us you care. And he writes, how rich, coming from the same fiends who care so much about mummy that you chased her into a tunnel from which she never emerged. I really hope some of these journalists are reading this book because it's so searing the way he writes about them. And that's what they deserve.
It is.
Like...
I don't think it'll make a difference, though.
No, I don't think so either. You have to be a specific kind of person to be in that role.
Gross.
Really gross. Okay, so, yeah, the theme kind of continues throughout the book, really, that he never really calls it my mother's death. It's since, yeah, mommy's disappearance. And that pretty much continues the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure now, and he's even spoken about it, obviously, he knows that that's not the case, but...
Or... He knows that it is the case and had to accept and retell the story now saying that...
Yeah, that's true. See, here she goes.
Like, if she really came back, then he'd have to be like, I gotta stop saying disappearance. Yeah. Like, all right, no, she's dead, guys. Don't worry.
Yeah, she's definitely dead.
I'm gonna go spend Christmas in Canada for no reason. Because she's dead.
Just to reiterate, she is dead. Okay?
I accept her death now and I'm good. Because I'm gonna go see her on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You said, here she goes.
Here she goes.
Conspiracies are my favorite.
What's your favorite conspiracy theory ever?
Well, I'm big into the Illuminati right now.
Oh! Careful! Careful now.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Just cut this out. Never mind.
No. Okay. All right, we'll move on. For our own safety,
exactly.
We'll move on.
I can't publish my conspiracy thoughts.
So... Kind of moving on, again, one continuous theme that runs through the book is the way he speaks about his relationship with William and how William, he made it clear when they went away to school, like, I don't know you, don't come hang out with me. And I understand that probably hurt at the time, but two teenage men and then into their 20s, like, that's a fairly normal dynamic.
It really is. Especially a brother dynamic.
Yeah.
My initial reaction was how sad that's so mean of Will. And then I was like,
totally.
Okay, what big brother is like, come here, little
this
guy.
This is my little,
like,
bro.
Tag along with me. They were desperately trying to establish their own identity.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I
Which Which I don't think they ever were able to, you know, yeah. They, even like you said, they both had to walk behind the coffin. Like, it was always the pair of them, you know, and obviously we know the difference between the two, but outside of their roles in the family, I don't think they ever got that separation. Yeah. Even you see old pictures of them, they're always wearing the same outfit, everything. Like,
and Harry talks about how bad Will hated that.
Yeah. And I think even people that aren't brought up in royalty wear the same outfits as their siblings a lot. Yeah, and that's annoying.
I always used to match my sister when we were little.
And who likes it?
No.
No one likes it. But so, you know, going back to, I just feel like that's a very normal dynamic, which leads me into that. I feel that Harry wrote this book when he was feeling extra angry. Like, there's a lot of resentment towards his brother and father, which I think still remains. But at the time of writing this, it might have been at a boiling point, because you can tell that he really tries to include little digs. You know what I mean? And they seem kind of intentional, which I don't love.
No, I agree.
Like, tell the story. You know what I mean? You don't have to mention that your brother's balding. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of like one of those things that, and I think we talked about this before too. I think that we kind of are more credible, if anything, that I love Harry. I'm in love with him. Like, yes. I just want to throw that out there again in case you're listening. Like, I am in love with you, but we don't blindly support everything he says and does also.
No. Yeah, definitely not.
Because, you know, again, this is a memoir. Write the memoir. You don't have to, you know, kind of include those little, like, passive-aggressive digs every time you talk about your brother and dad.
I also kind of wish that the memoir was the only thing.
Yeah.
I kind of wish there was no Oprah interview. I kind of wish there was no Netflix docuseries. As much as I enjoyed that insight and watching that, I think now having this third avenue of telling his story, even though I think so far this is the best done and the most genuine from him, you almost can't help but eye roll a little bit. Like, oh, here we go, Harry again, telling his story.
I completely agree.
I even felt that. And then I texted you and I was like, I'm so sad that I just got annoyed with Harry.
Yeah.
But, like, seeing him on 60 Minutes and then with Michael Strahan. And, I mean, like you mentioned earlier, he's promoting his book. He's got to do that.
Yeah.
But now we've already had the Netflix. We've already had the Oprah. We've already had all the Megxit drama.
Right.
This seems to be what we needed the most, this book. But because it's coming after so much else, I'm worried that a lot of people are meeting it with just another eye roll of, oh, here they go. They have so much to say.
I actually couldn't agree with you more.
You know?
Yes. I think this was the best avenue to tell his story, and it's coming last. So I think people feel that, like, they're just tired.
They're just over.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like, too, my mom actually touched on this. I like that this is his story. Megan's not really involved, because I think that opens people up to being more receptive of the story, because when she's sitting next to him, people have this, you know,
they immediately
assumption.
Assume that she's controlling him.
Exactly.
She's,
right.
You know.
So this is his story. I think it's very genuine and thorough. And I think, like you said, this is what we needed the whole time. But now that this has come after all of those other events, I think there's some level of fatigue.
Yeah.
You know, like Harry fatigue.
I definitely get that. I started to feel it a little bit myself.
I actually did too.
Especially while I was, like, waiting for the book to come and seeing all these different interviews.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, here we go.
Right. Because we even talked about it too. Like, okay, in every interview, he's kind of telling the same story. Like, we got the story. But then it is true. He's on a book tour. He's promoting the book. And I do want to make it clear too that the proceeds of this book are going to his charities. It's not like he's
I don't even know if I realized that. That's
great. Yeah. So that even goes into why he'd want to promote it even more. You know what I mean?
Of course.
But I understand the fatigue that some people may feel. And I totally agree that maybe this should have been the avenue we went with the whole time.
I think so.
And it would have had a bigger impact.
I actually even kind of like in the very beginning when he's talking about how they're at Frogmore after Prince Philip's funeral.
Yeah.
And how he ends that with, you know, how can I explain to them how I really feel? It would take too long. They're not willing to listen.
Yeah.
And then he goes into this book by saying, and so, Pa, Willie, world, here you go.
Oh.
And so I do really like that as this is his side.
Yeah.
And not just in a defensive way. This is his story.
Yeah.
And I really like that. And I think we got into too much of the drama before really understanding him. So yes. People took sides. And I think we needed this book all along.
I completely agree with you. It's almost like, you know, even therapists say, like, if you're angry at someone, write them a letter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or if you want to get your story across, write a letter. This is a letter to his family, really, and probably to the world that consumes all of the information that he's so angry with, you know? But, oh, there's another... Oh! Speaking of people that haven't read the book or anything, or just speculate. So the dedication is for Meg and Archie and Lily and, of course, my mother. So I'm just, you know, scrolling the news the other day, and one of the headlines is... What was it? Harry shades King Charles.
Snubs his brother and father yeah. in the dedication.
It's to his wife and children. Do you want him to list out every single person in his bloodline? Like, I don't understand. This right. is for, this is dedicated to his children and his wife. Like, that's okay.
I think that's okay.
This is dedicated to my wife and my children and my brother and my dad. My neighbor that I lived next to 14 years ago, whatever.
Right.
Like, so yeah. Okay, so then we go into his young life at Eton College. And still obviously processing the loss of his mom as a young man. First of all, he lost his mom at like the most formative time in a young man's life, you know, and then he obviously kind of acted out a little bit, but did he really? Like, I have here a note. There was a tabloid titled Harry's Drug Shame, and the journalist is obviously really gross, as they are, but also the consumers that bought that magazine, because it's like, he's what, 17? Like, who gives a shit about him smoking pot at a prestigious school?
Who's even calling pot a drug?
They're, come like, on, like...
Guys...
Let's be real. Be fucking for real. But, yeah, like, who cares? I just imagine, like, a Karen, like, checking out at the grocery store and seeing, like, Harry's Drug Shame and buying it and just being enraged that he's smoking pot.
I know. Like,
gross. And then, you know, he graduated and then was very proud of that and was accused of cheating, which he was adamant that he did not cheat.
Well, wasn't it like an art exam?
Yes. Oh, yeah. He's like, how do you
cheat art? And then exactly. Once he said that, I was like, no, really?
No, that's like, a great point. Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand. But the palace stuck by never complain, never explain, or never explain, never complain. Like, how frustrating.
A lot of his life was like that.
Yeah.
He never got a chance to explain.
Right.
Which is maybe why he's over-explaining, though.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I can understand. I totally get it. And sometimes it takes, like, talking through it and putting it in perspective where it's like, yeah, he does deserve to tell a story. The one thing that my only qualm with this whole book is I think he totally deserves to tell a story. Anyone can write a memoir. So many people wrote memoirs. Like, that's not a huge deal. I just don't love the passive aggression when it comes to talking about his dad and his brother, which I understand why it's there. But this memoir is, like, kind of forever. And this is just a small blip in your life where there's animosity, hopefully. So I don't love that. I do understand why he wants to tell the story. Oh, where I was going with that is... Because when it comes to talking about his brother, he knows William doesn't have the ability to write a memoir.
And that's what I was just, that's what I was like gearing up to bring up next is that,
yeah.
Like, there's no rebuttal. Nobody right. can come out, his family can't come out and say, this was true, this wasn't, we don't agree with that.
Exactly.
They can't.
Right.
So they can try to spin their British media as best as they want, but they can't write a book like this.
Exactly. And I think he kind of maybe knows that or has lost sight of that where...
We're only going to get his side.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, the relationship with the tabloids and how they leak things through the tabloids, like that's so frustrating and I could understand his side of that completely, but that's all they can, that's all they have.
Exactly. So he spends his whole life feeling like they're using the media to their advantage.
Yeah.
And putting out stories through the media the way that they can. And then now he has an opportunity to actually tell the truth on his own platform. And all they can do is just leak stories.
Exactly. So that's where he kind of loses me just in speaking about the dynamic between him and his brother and dad.
I do agree with that. And I've actually seen some shade online of just generally knowing that they can't rebuttal anything that he's saying.
Right.
So he could slip in lies. And I don't think that that is what's happening.
Right.
I really don't. But it does, maybe he has lost sight of the fact that they can't say anything.
Right, exactly. And in that same vein, I just don't think Harry and Charles speak the same love language. And I don't think anyone's at fault there. But the way he talks about his interactions with his dad, like, there's one excerpt where he would go to bed and find notes on his bed of how proud Charles was of him. Aww. And he wondered why he didn't say these things while he was sitting next to him at dinner. But that was him trying.
Yeah.
Like, imagine Charles' upbringing with the Queen. Like, it was probably not very...
Well, Harry talks a couple of times about wanting to hug his grandmother, but that's unheard of.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't do that. And then he thought of, you know, his dad growing up. And
exactly.
I think we even saw it in The Crown, but I know Harry talks about Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip being away for, like, an extended period of time when Charles was young and they returned and he got a firm handshake.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like...
So, what do you want from the man? He's 74 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not going to change the way he was brought up, but that's him trying. That he wrote those notes and left, like, I just, again, this is all in the same vein of kind of my only qualm with it so far is the way he depicts his relationship with his dad and brother, because I truly just don't think they speak the same love language, and that's okay. But Harry needs to...
I also think they're all just doing their best.
I think so, too.
And I think Harry is a Spencer.
Yeah.
And William is a whale.
Yes, 100%.
Or whales, or I don't know how, Windsor.
Windsor, yeah, right.
Windsor would make more sense, I suppose. But Harry is warm and stubborn and cheeky and
emotional.
He is just like Diana.
Yeah.
And William is the heir. And maybe he still has it somewhere deep inside of him, but he's got to be like Charles. He's got to be like Elizabeth. He's not granted the same emotions, really.
Exactly.
Or not afforded the same emotions, really.
Yes. And I don't know, you know, again, we won't know how much accommodation they make for how Harry is, but just from what I'm reading, he doesn't really try to understand them either. You know, like, I feel like we just analyzed them in a matter of minutes, where you see how Charles was brought up, you see William's role.
But they can't seem to see
each other's exactly.
sides.
That's what, like, I just feel like they're all doing their best, but no one's trying to accommodate for the other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I could see that.
Oh, I did want to make a side note that if anyone's interested in hearing more about the actual lengths that journalists go to get, like, a scoop on specifically Harry and Meghan, last year I listened to this, like, amazing podcast series called Harry, Meghan, and the Media, and it was actually produced by the BBC, and it went into depth about paparazzi and journalists and what they would do to get information about the royals. And it even included interviews with some of those journalists who would literally admit the things that they've done. And, like, the interviewer would be like, you didn't care that that was illegal or anything. And they'd be like, no, I really didn't. You know what I mean? It's actually crazy. But yeah, I would highly recommend that because it gives more insight into his actual battle with these people. You know, it's actually
sick.
They didn't
care because one good shot of him.
Yeah.
Angry or retaliating or whatever.
Right.
If they could sell it, there's a new house for them.
Exactly.
They don't care if it's illegal.
Right. They really don't. So yeah, that's really interesting. Really disturbing, but interesting. Okay, so then Harry went into Charles and Camilla, and some of the things, we'll get into it, but he said something about Charles marrying Camilla. He said, no hard feelings. We recognized that he was finally going to be with the woman he loved, the woman he'd always loved. And I thought that was such a mature yet complicated conclusion to come to about your parents' marriage.
Yeah.
Like, that took a big man to say that. You know what I mean? He could have easily vilified Camilla the rest of his life and, like, hated her or whatever.
Right.
But he realized that that's who his dad always wanted to be with. And that's such, I think, a mature take on that situation. And complicated, but mature.
I agree.
You know. And then what did you think about when he said, when the wedding did finally take place, without Granny, who chose not to attend? I was under the impression that she did choose not to attend, but then she did throw them a reception after. So it's like, let's not leave that out, right? Right. You know, because she's the head of the Church of England, and it was a second wedding, so I can understand why she didn't think she could attend the wedding, uh-huh. but she did throw them a reception after. So I just feel like that was an important detail to leave out.
No, that's fair. I guess I actually didn't even really pick up on that. But now that you say that, that's kind of another, like, subliminal, like, well, obviously she didn't approve of it.
Exactly.
And there is a thing that he says about how the wedding kept getting postponed, and he's like, maybe the universe is stopping something that should have never happened.
Yeah.
And then he says, oh, mummy, or, you know, something yeah, like right, that. But right. It was just another quick, like, they're not supposed to get married.
Right.
I don't know. I know. Didn't mean to be in there. It was like a two-sentence thing that you just could have left out. It didn't help you at all, so.
I just think, and again, using the word of the day is qualm, but that's my qualm with it, because he gets to spin. I don't want to say spin. That's aggressive. Because I don't think he's spinning. Sorry, I don't think any of this is untrue. But he gets to deliver.
But it's his side.
Yes, and he gets to deliver it any way he wants to, yes. knowing that the other side won't ever come out. So that's convenient for him.
That's a good way to put it.
You know.
And I agree that I don't think anything that he's saying in here is untrue. Yeah. But it is very convenient that he can tell his side in his way, on his own platform, and they never can.
Exactly. So, yeah. And we might be a little biased, because, I mean, I do love Harry, but we love Charles and Camilla.
I love Charles and Camilla.
I really do. I love them so much. Like, I just love them.
I can't wait to see them.
I know! Did we?
In person.
I know. I'm gonna be so supportive of them.
I can't wait.
Like, remember when he first became king and that pen leaked over his fingers? Yes. And he got so frustrated, and people were like, oh, just kind of like bad-mouthing how emotional he got over it. And me and you were like, no, can you understand the pressure he's under? Right? That is so cute.
It's just so funny to me too. And like, I am so appreciative, I guess, maybe, of just like what a little old man he is.
His little face.
I mean, Elizabeth was unmatched. He's never going to fill her shoes. Exactly. He's going to be somebody different.
Yes.
And I think it's adorable watching him get, like, ornery and frustrated.
Yes, he's so cute.
I think it's very real.
I think so,
like,
too.
Okay, maybe Elizabeth would have never done that, but, like, there was a clip of him the other day where he's like, well, tell her to hurry up then. And he's like, because Camilla's, like, lagging behind or something. And the whole article is, you know, Elizabeth would have never gotten this frustrated.
Yeah.
And it's like, this frustrated, like,
he's fine.
What husband is not like, come on now?
Exactly.
It's just so cute to me.
I think it's so cute. And I love how a lot of times you see Camilla kind of clean up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, she really has a good way of kind of, like, calming him down. And they're so silly together. Oh, my God, I love them.
She's his person. She always has been.
I can't wait to go see them. I'm so excited. Oh, anyways, another side note. Now we're getting into just kind of miscellaneous thoughts through part one.
Okay.
Harry was speaking about the Help for Heroes Foundation, and he quickly touched on that they had bracelets that wore, and that he and William wore the bracelets to an event with Kate, and that the outcome was, like, astonishing. And that's something I want to do a whole separate episode on, is the Duchess effect, because it's actually so interesting, and I think it sheds a lot of light on why there's way more interest in the fashion of the royal family than, it's not just like, oh, what a pretty dress. Like, they make conscious decisions to shed light or get attention to whatever cause they're at that day. So it's really kind of interesting. And I want to do a whole episode on that, because I think some people are like, oh, just who cares about what they wore? It's like, actually, a lot of people.
There's a lot of thought into it, too. It's very intentional.
Exactly. So did you realize, because I sure didn't, and this just, like, goes to show you, truly anything you read about the royal family, you really can't trust that it's true. Like, I feel like they're the only public figures out there that anything you read...
It's never actually come from them. Yeah. This is the first thing that's actually come from one of them.
Right. And anything you read, like, this is an example that I thought was true up until reading this book, is that Harry didn't actually give William Diana Sapphire to give to Kate.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Like, hello? I really thought that this whole time.
I did too.
So, joke's on us, I guess.
Yeah. And then I actually caught myself trying to think back of, like, why did I believe this so much? Did I think that I saw him say this?
Or, yeah.
Because I swore I did, but...
Yeah, what? I guess not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because he even goes to say later in the book that there was a book written about him, which is so crazy in itself. I think Megan touched on this in the Netflix documentary where there's literal books written about them. And they're like, I've never met this person in my life. Like, that's so strange. But he essentially turned Cameron Diaz down because he just, like, wasn't into her. And he was like, yeah, I've never met her. Like, what a weird thing. So he goes to say, if you like reading pure bollocks, then Royal Biographers are for you. But it reminded me of a time that I bought this book from Barnes & Noble. I can't remember what it was called. It was about, like, the women in the royal family. And within the first 10 pages, it was just setting it up so dramatically like a soap opera that I closed it immediately. And I never return anything. Like, if something doesn't fit, anything, I never return it. And I literally brought it back to Barnes & Noble because I just thought of it as doing, like, my part to make sure this author didn't get the proceeds of this book. Like, I was like, no, I don't even want this in my house. It was just so dramatic. But a lot of books are like that, where, especially about them, where they write them like soap operas. Like, yeah. It's really probably not that intense.
I did like that he brought up, correct me, is it James Hewitt?
Yes.
I think I went to high school with a Justin Hewitt.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know.
Okay.
But James, how he... Because that was another thing that I did feed into that a little bit. Yeah. That's a conspiracy that I was into of, he's not even Charles.
Yeah.
And I love that he's just like, okay, so first of all, she met him... She did have an affair with him.
Yeah.
Years after I was born.
Right.
And also, my father never sat me down and assured me that he was my father.
Yeah, right.
Like, we didn't discuss Jason Hewitt. Like, that was not a thing. But think James. Of all... James. Why is it so hard for me, I wonder?
Because I think you went to high school with someone named Jason Hewitt.
No, I think that was Justin.
Justin Hewitt.
God, have mercy. What just happened?
Oh, not Jason. James. Right. James, yeah.
He was the writing instructor, right?
Yes. He was cute, too.
Yeah, very cute.
Yeah.
But because he was a ginge,
they
just do the whole, he must be... Must be Harry's real dad.
I feel like Harry also mentions way too many times that he's a ginger. Like, he's really working.
Yes.
What did he go through?
He was clearly bothered by it for a long time. That really impacted him that he was a ginger.
Like, hello, you have the Spencer genes. Like, have you seen that thing? I actually think we've touched on this before, but in their Christmas card last year, or 2021, where they show Lilibet and Archie.
Yep.
And someone commented, like, Diana was like, these are mine.
Yep. Like blonde hair, blue eyes.
So cute. Oh, so cute. You're about halfway through. You're in part two.
I'm in part two.
And again, I don't want this to sound too negative. This is just our real takes on it. But part two is so freaking boring.
Yes.
But on another note, it really shows his time in the military was so important to him and so impactful in his life. And this is his memoir.
I appreciate that.
So he can write about it because it's his memoir.
I've been, like, reminding myself as I'm getting through. So I obviously bought the book immediately and then also downloaded it on Audible.
Yes.
Because I really like him reading it to me and just, like, I don't know, go about the rest of my day. And
talking about his penis. I was listening to it.
A lot of penis, actually, talk. So I kept reminding myself as I was listening and starting to feel kind of bored listening to him being in the military and learning how to fly and just, like, nose down. And I'm just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I should fast forward. And then I stopped myself and thought, you know, you're part of the problem. If the only reason that you bought this book and are listening to this is because you want to hear the juicy drama.
Exactly.
This book is about Harry's life.
Yes.
And so some of it is not drama.
Yeah.
And it helps you understand what's important to him and what drives him and the man that he is. And so I still don't find it that interesting.
Yeah.
But I have kind of reframed. This book is not a juicy tell-all.
Exactly.
This is his memoir. And
yeah.
There is a difference.
Yeah.
This is not another tabloid. This
exactly.
is his life.
And, you know, if we have to skip through parts like we do the Quidditch parts in Harry Potter, then
that's exactly
so be
what
it.
This is. This is the Quidditch.
The Quidditch World Cup.
And, like, I still like it more than other sports. You know what I mean?
100%.
I'd rather hear Harry's military than anybody else's military story.
Absolutely.
But I'm also still not that excited.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's really cool. I actually looked into what an Apache helicopter pilot is.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because Ryan, my husband, acted real like it was really cool that he did that. And he had 25 kills from, like, that's so cool. So I was like, oh, is it? And then I look into it, and I guess it really is cool. Yeah. It's just, it's kind of got,
it doesn't really do it for me.
It really doesn't, yeah.
But I'm happy for him.
I'm so happy for him.
Good. You know what I did really enjoy, and the parts that I really could get into, is anything and everything Africa. Yeah. I really liked how into, I didn't realize how much Botswana was really a huge influence in his life.
Yeah.
You know, we hear about him visiting with Meg, and we know that that was a place that was important to him.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how far back it went. I was texting you earlier about the Okavango Delta. I think I said that right. Okavango. And how they did that Disney Plus. Megan did the voiceover for the elephants.
Yeah.
Just the amount of time that he spent in Africa in researching and shining a light on everything that's
important to him. Like, yeah, that's his happy place. Yes. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah. I actually did a little bit of research into poaching yesterday, too, because have you gotten to the part where he is, like, following the poachers and stuff?
I don't think so.
Okay. Because he kind of goes into detail of, like, what he finds when he finds an animal that has been affected by poachers.
Okay.
And Ryan and I were talking, like, I mean, how much can this really go for? You know, it's just, what is it? Keratin is what their horns are made of, rhino horns are made of. So it's like, how much can it really go for? And it said on the black market, a black rhino horn can go for $400,000 per kilogram.
Oh my God.
So it's like, obviously.
But what do they even do with it? I don't understand.
I don't understand either. I actually have no idea. So I guess I didn't do that much research.
And so then I did not research, but my understanding of poaching is that they are not necessarily killing the animal.
That's what he says one time is like, sometimes they don't even kill them.
They're just, like, cutting off the pieces
like
that they
face.
Want.
Like, their face. Yeah. And then he was like, and then they go into a bush and die. Like, it's so sad. And I'd love to put those poachers in, like, a rabid chimpanzee enclosure and just let nature take its course.
Seriously.
That'd be awesome.
I think that if you want to hunt, you should do it with your bare hands.
Totally.
Make it a fair fight.
Yeah.
Because you're not fighting a rhino with a weapon.
Right, exactly.
So let's see what you can do.
Yeah.
I used to tell my old manager that all the time. He would go hunting. I'd be like, yeah, well, fuck your gun. See if you can take on the deer on your own. Then I'll respect you.
Deer are actually so scary to me. They're so erratic.
Yeah.
Like,
they're like tiny little horses.
Yeah.
They're so quick on their feet.
Yeah. But I even feel like a horse, you can like kind of pet them and calm them down, where I feel like deer are just so chaotic. They scare me a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. But, okay, going back to his time in the military, let's see. There's a part that stuck out because anytime his location was leaked by the press,
yep,
and like the literal Taliban would set like a target on him, he'd be so frustrated, obviously, that he'd have to be extracted, but never once did he make it sound like he was scared for his life. He always made sure to explain that he understood why he was being extracted because he put his
team in danger.
Yeah. Yeah. So I liked that that was his mindset on it. Obviously, that's so frustrating because this is where he felt like the most healing and the most himself, but I like that he understood why he'd have to be extracted.
Right. I feel bad at how often the media, and he even references that they just called him a coward at any chance they could.
Yeah.
Anytime he was extracted, or his knee injury or his thumb injury or any dumb little thing.
Yeah.
So he's scared. He doesn't want to do it.
I just don't understand. If his location is leaked to, again, the literal Taliban, you don't have to explain to me why that would be a danger to everyone else.
Right.
Like, I'm never like, wow, what a coward. Like, hello?
I also thought it was so ironic that they sent him to Afghanistan, thinking that that was safer than Iraq.
Yeah, I guess I don't know anything.
I don't know if I would use the word safe at all.
No, right, yeah. But, yeah.
I give him a lot of credit, though, and I really appreciated, too, his outlook of not necessarily feeling safe, but knowing that the paparazzi weren't getting to him and he wasn't in the public eye.
Yeah.
And how that was just his own little safe space, for lack of a better way to put it.
I think he felt like he literally for once could just exist as a normal guy.
Yeah.
You know? I love
that.
He
was a soldier.
Yeah. I love that they called him Lieutenant Wales.
Ah, yeah.
He's so cute. Before leaving Afghanistan, he had to do one obligatory exit interview. Which I thought was interesting, too, that he would have to make those bargains with the press. Like, if I sit down and interview with you once in a while, then you will keep my, that embargo on his location. You know, that's a weird transaction to have to make in the first place. But anyways, in which he once again, in this interview, berated the British press. And in that section, he mentioned that the residue of initial belief, even after something has been unequivocally debunked. And I love how he wrote that, because being a Royals watcher, I have to say that's one of the most frustrating parts, and we've both experienced this, as discussing things with people that just casually read headlines or tabloids or from questionable sources. And even when you explain the facts, you can't erase that residual belief.
Yep.
Like, once their opinion is created, that's what they feel. And that's so frustrating. I hate that. But yeah. So I liked how he worded that. He knows it's like an uphill battle that he probably will never win. If someone's against Harry and Meghan, this book is not going to change their mind. The Netflix documentary is not going to change their mind. It's just how they're going to feel forever. You know what I mean? So yeah.
So I didn't watch the 60 Minutes interview, but I have read some headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It comes up in an interview about how he is, like, throwing some of the blame on Camilla for certain things being leaked.
Yes. Basically, I'm seeing if I took notes, because I think he mentions it in the book, too.
Well, that I know the book part, but I thought I had heard that it came up in an interview. But I...
Oh, yes.
In the book where he's mentioning very specific things from the meeting between Camilla and Will.
Yeah.
And that were leaked, that were true.
Yes.
And then there are times later where things are starting to come out that are factual. And he's really questioning everything and everyone around him.
Yeah. He referred to it as Camilla's need to rehabilitate her image made her more dangerous.
Yeah.
Which is sad, because can you imagine, like, not being able to trust anyone around you?
I know.
That's very sad.
And I think he said in the docuseries at one point, it's not about who you trust, it's about who they trust.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because you can feel like, I only told two people.
Yeah.
But if those two people also trust two people, somewhere along the line, somebody that's not so credible is going to sell that story.
Exactly. Did you get to the Vegas part?
Nope.
Okay. Well, you'll get there and you know the story anyways, but he basically goes into how he was out partying in Vegas with his friends and they brought some girls back.
Strip poker or something?
Yeah, strip poker. So innocent. Again,
yeah,
he's in his 20s. Who cares? But
there's like a picture of him naked though.
A picture was, because one of the girls took the picture and sold it to the press. So it's like, wow, you can't even have a night out.
Yeah.
Because you can't trust anyone, because money talks. I mean, again, you know, if this is just some random girl, she's never going to see you again.
Yeah.
What does she gain for not selling this? You know what I mean? Like, she thinks she owes it to you.
Right. No, that's true.
You know what
true.
I mean? But from his point of view, if that's everyone you interact with your whole life, what a lonely existence.
Like, lonely.
That's so sad. I would never sell a picture of you, Harry.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
A little off topic, but not really.
Okay.
So, fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, yes!
All the Harrys.
Oh, my God! Wait, who's the third Harry?
Potter.
Oh.
Harry Styles, Harry Potter, Harry Sussex.
Okay, got it. I'm marrying Prince Harry.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That means you gotta either kill Styles or Potter.
I already have my answer.
You already do?
Yeah.
Obviously, you're fucking Styles.
Styles, and I'm killing Potter, because guess what? He has the Resurrection Stone.
I hate you. Because guess what?
So joke's on you.
I definitely thought that was going to be a little harder.
No, I just feel like Harry Styles would just be such a good time. Okay. And then we know Prince Harry is like the best husband ever. So.
He really is. I'm actually really excited to get into... I mean, I'm pretty sure I know what to expect from part 3. I think we've already heard a lot from the both of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do like the tone of the book. I like his general message so far. I'm a little bored in part 2, but I'm excited to meet Meg.
And, yeah.
I am nervous Did you read about the fight between Harry and William yet? Have you got there?
I haven't gotten there yet.
I haven't either.
And I also know another.
I was really hoping that wasn't in the book.
Me too. And I know another part that I'm kind of disappointed about.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet. So again, this, our opinions could totally change when we hear it in context.
Exactly.
Because we're going to do our research before we make any judgment. We don't
blindly support anyone or anything.
No. But I heard that in part three, he includes the text messages between Harry or Meghan and Kate.
I don't like that.
Where didn't Meghan go to court over a personal letter being leaked? But now you feel comfortable.
I don't like that at all.
I don't like that either. I just feel like you're just doing more damage at this point. And again, we support you telling your story because I think it's important to tell your story in your own words. This is the only way it's going to come out.
Right.
But some things within family and within brothers should remain private, I think.
I think so, too. I'm interested to read it for myself and the context around it.
Yeah.
And form my own opinion.
Yeah.
But there are a couple things coming up that I'm like,
yeah, I'm nervous.
Do we need that?
Yeah.
Like, what is that, like?
Right.
What are we getting to here?
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see.
I wish I could come up with a fuck, marry, kill for you. I'm going to come up with a good one someday.
Okay.
I can't think of one now, though.
Fair. No worries.
Part one done. Again, next episode, we'll see more of the disillusion of his relationships and more of the recent stuff. So I think we'll really need a whole episode to dedicate to that.
I don't know if next episode will be as positive. I'm a little nervous.
No, I know. Me too.
We'll see, though.
Me too, yeah.
We were nervous going into the docuseries, and it turned out to be much different. So you really can't look at all these headlines and other people's points of views.
Yeah.
I wanna read it for myself and
I love how,
see how I feel. And
I love how last episode we were so, like, gung-ho, Team Harry and Meghan, and then we're reading this, and I just think we have a very realistic...
I agree.
Outlook. Like, again, we don't blindly support anything and everything, and I think that makes us more credible, so.
And, like we were saying when we were upstairs, as I read this, I'm just reinforced by how I feel about all of the royals that have come up in this story.
So, absolutely.
Even if there are times where it seems like maybe the tone is to try to throw some shade on Paw and Willie, I still very much feel for... Like, we were discussing Charles's love language and the position that William is in. And I feel like I can very much understand where they're all coming from.
Yeah.
And it's very sad that they can't seem to see that within each other.
I know.
Maybe it's a guy thing. Maybe it's a Windsor thing.
I think
maybe
they need us.
Maybe it's a British thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely.
But they obviously need us.
They definitely need us. I think it's more nuanced than... I told you someone reached out from work the other day, like, wait, so are you on the side of Harry and Meghan or on the side of the British royal family? And I was like, well, I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Nobody's at war.
Yeah. Like, I think it's much more nuanced than that. And I think that we are elite for understanding that.
I
so.
Really do too. I think everybody needs our podcast.
I think so too. Okay. Done with part one. We'll be back, I don't know, whenever it feels right for part two when we finish the book. And we will unpack that. So I'm excited for that. But thank you again for joining. And we will be back soon. So until then,
God save the king.
Yay! Bye.